It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So while I appreciate your phobia, and I think we can work on that in general, you do need to understand conceptually that fire is neither bad nor good. It is just a tool, and we need to recognize it as such.
Well, for destruction.
That's way too eloquent for what I was going for, the fire bad deal we were going for here.
You're right. I should have stuck with the fire bad thing.
What weirds me out is your surgery appears to have mostly affected your voice, and you now sound like 30 years older. Just the whole time we were setting up here, I'm just having flashbacks to my grandfather, like trying to do something, and just the very breathy, no, that's not good. And I'm like, I didn't think it would impact your voice. That was not the primary organ I was expecting impacted your voice box with this heart surgery.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little worried because he didn't think that his voice had so many problems afterwards. But, you know, it's the tube, you know, they have.
Oh, shit, this is real? I thought I was just mocking you for an affectation that happened to be happening. Oh, wow. Oh,
my voice.
Apologies then. I didn't mean to actually tease you about something that was real.
I don't think my voice has completely bounced back from the tube. I'm not sure it will. I mean, if it hasn't by now. So Dad's a little worried that is permanent.
That doesn't seem right. Shit takes a while sometimes. It took me about a year and a half for the nerve damage in my leg, but it's actually better now.
Oh, okay.
Even nerves, we have discovered, can grow back, despite what Thomas Covenant unbeliever would have had us believe. There's a series where it's a major plot point that it is medically impossible for nerves to grow back. It's a fantasy series, and it's a big thing because his nerves come back, and it's because of magic and things like that, but it's a major plot point. And at the time, that is what we believed scientifically. We have since learned that is not true.
See.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that rips people out of their hospital beds and forces them to talk on the air. We've done it before with the cancer patient. And now we're doing it with a heart patient, and we will not stop until every bed in the hospital is emptied because we have used them up for our podcast. That got away from me there. I'm Tony.
Frankenstein, and this is episode 550.
How's it going, Frank?
I mean, technically, I'm Frankenstein's monster, but, you know.
Yeah. William was the doctor.
I don't know.
That joke never disappoints. I've seen many versions where people sneak that into other concepts. Never not funny.
I guess I should apologize to everybody for how my picture looks, but that's just the lighting in this room.
Yeah, I was legit like, I said it because I'm me, But I was really worried because I was like, the lighting's obviously bad, but he full on looks like the undead. And he had open heart surgery. I don't know how much of it is that.
How this works.
But apparently he says it's the lighting. It's not even his house. I don't know where he is right now, but it does seem like the kind of background that in a horror movie, eventually there'd be a silhouette figure behind you. That my mic would cut out and I'd be like, and you wouldn't know. And then your feed would cut and, you know, all that business.
Yep. And I would be dead.
I've seen a lot of those movies. For those of you just joining us, be nice to William. He had surgery recently, big time surgery. They took his heart out and replaced it with a cow. He's got a beating cow in his chest now. I always go back to Strong Bad answering machine message where he's talking to, sends a message to Marzipan and says, you have a goat face. And I don't mean that like your face is like a goat's face or anything, or like, you know, you have like goat like feature. I mean, your entire face is an entire goat. And then the Homestar shows up and does a bit about being the goat face killer. And it was only years later that I was like, that's a fucking Wu-Tang reference. I never realized. Ghostface Killer from Wu-Tang Clan. Never put that together. Anyway, yeah, for those of you just joining us, we grab hospital patients and make them be on a podcast. We have a hat is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And all you great listeners write in emails to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And we read them and talk about them. That's how this works. We don't give advice necessarily or anything. We just talk about them. Like your emails are the seeds from which blossom whatever bullshit we feel like talking about. Possibly Tony Danza as an English teacher. It's happened. So, how have you been, William? What's new with you?
It's been an interesting 2 weeks, to be sure. Tomorrow will be 2 weeks since the atrocity, as I like to call it.
Wow. See, yeah. I heard it went as well as good as could have been hoped for.
Sure, but you know, when one human being is cracking open the ribcage of another human being and digging around in there, I mean, pretty much every standard for the last 300,000 years of human history, that's an atrocity. You can't really get around it.
You used to say this when I would crack open people's chest cavities all the time. Get over it. It's just a thing that happens.
It's just a thing. And now I'm an abomination. I'm a chimera.
And I saw a video of you when you were still drugged up. It was adorable.
Was it?
It was. I was. All I could think was, I'm like, how is he going to be in so much trouble for sending? But she only sent it to two of us. Two very specific individuals, and I have not shown it to anyone else, and I will not, of course.
Yeah, I didn't say anything terrible or anything.
No, you didn't. No, you just fucking drugged up. No, it's very cute, is what it was. Trish should have taken video of me when I came out of surgery.
Yeah, I think people were a little surprised because when I had the tube in, I was coughing or trying to cough. So it wasn't good. It was a very dramatic and unpleasant thing for all people involved, particularly me. And and the tube came out. How I got it into my head that I was going to crack a joke, but that's what I did. But the joke didn't even come quickly because, you know, I couldn't, I had to struggle to get it out, you know, which I remember thinking at the time, oh, this is perfect. This is great for effect, you know, like I didn't think to do this. I didn't think to look like I was struggling to speak, but I should have. I should have done it, but it turned out it worked out just perfect in my favor because, you know, Abby's got her ear close by because she doesn't know if I'm going to even be able to talk and I'm struggling. And finally I croak out this terrible joke. And my voice sounds awful, which is also perfect. So I just think everybody was kind of surprised. I think they thought I would be mad. I think that's.
I don't know what the normal reaction is coming out of surgery. And for me, at least, it was much later I found out. I very much don't remember the beginning, because long time later, Trish was like, no, we had an entire conversation and then you went back to sleep. And I have zero memory of that. The first time I woke up was apparently the second time I woke up.
Me, I woke up with the tube still in my throat and with everybody telling me, you know, the person who's going to take this out is on their way, which I remember thinking, that's not helpful. You know, all that communicates to me is we have no idea when this person is going to be here.
At least, you know, they're not just sitting at home.
Sure. I mean, I guess it was good to know that they were coming, but coming from where, you know, I mean, I didn't know.
Yeah. They're on their way from Sao Paulo.
And actually I was fine as long as I wasn't coughing, but I wasn't coughing on purpose. You know, that was an involuntary thing. If my body stopped coughing, I could lay still and it wasn't such a big deal, but right. Every once in a while I'd start to cough and that was what really caused trouble. And as you can hear, my vocal cords haven't really bounced back. It's been 2 weeks,
but I haven't really bounced on back. The upshot, I think you could release quite the jazz album.
I would say, I don't really know what my singing voice is like anymore. So, but that's neither here nor there. So for the last 2 weeks, so I'm aware and medical professionals are aware. So they keep reminding me of it. My heart has never worked as well as it's working right now in my whole life. Right. The thing they corrected was a birth defect. So I don't know anything else but having a heart that doesn't work very well. I don't know what a working, you know, decent working heart feels like. So, you know, I'm anticipating, and I'm being told by medical professionals that I should reasonably anticipate that I'm going to feel pretty good after a while. But what's getting in the way of that is, you know, I'm on medication. I'm not getting very good sleep because I can't really get comfortable at night. And a few other things are kind of preventing me from really knowing what a new heart feels like.
Yeah.
So and also I'm having lots of migraines. Like almost every day I've had a migraine. Not today, thank goodness.
You mentioned that before. Is that an expected side effect?
No, but I mean, since migraines are such a kind of a mysterious thing, like medical science doesn't really know very much about them, I don't think it surprises anyone that
sure, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Migraines get triggered by so many things. Why wouldn't they be triggered by beta blockers whatever else? So, but I didn't have one today. And I don't think I had one yesterday. So that's a good sign. And so that's been kind of getting in the way. So for the last couple of weeks, I can't say that I felt great. I haven't, some days I felt really awful actually. So far it's been kind of, frustrating, I guess, you know, because I keep thinking to myself, and I keep hearing from other medical professionals, mind you, oh, you're going to feel great. It's
yeah.
Like, when's that going to be? When's well, that going to happen? I'd sure like that to happen. Right.
Based
now.
On the data you gave me, you're also not even halfway through your recovery time.
That is correct. And also by all reasonable measures, I'm getting better every day, even though I don't feel good, my blood pressure's good. My incision's healing nicely. I mean, everything's going well, maybe even better than they expected. Like you said, the surgeon said the surgery was very smooth and easy and everything was fine. I got out of the hospital earlier than I think they expected I would. Everything's going fine here. I'm just impatient, really, is all.
Oh, of course. And what, like, there's nothing to be done. Like, it's different if you're like, do these exercises to help. But in your case, it's like, just chill.
Yeah, mostly. I mean, there are some physical therapy things they want me to do and so on. But I mean, nothing's like speeding it along. It's just, some things just are going to take time, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just have to be patient, and I'm not, and I need to, sort of calm down.
Do you find yourself caring more about your fellow human beings?
I find myself caring more about cows, but.
Hey, there we go.
Not people.
Do you ever get visions about what the cow saw before?
I didn't. You know what? Now that you mentioned that, explains some things.
Yeah. This is the
shitty
sequel to The Eye that nobody asked for, called The Cow.
I haven't grown horns or an udder or anything, and as I understand it, if that hasn't happened by now, it's not going to.
We're past the udder stage.
Yeah, it's. I mean, so good news, bad news, I guess. Everything is actually going well. I just need to. Something else. Did we talk about how when I went to see the team beforehand, there wasn't really a mental health?
Yes, we did talk about this.
Peace. Okay. So while I was in the hospital, hospitals for a long time have had in rooms, they have marker boards where they'll put the name of the nurse so you'll know who your nurse is.
Yeah.
And sometimes the names of other people. So there were, my marker board had a lot of names on it, basically the whole team, physical therapy and all that stuff. And they even had the name of someone who was a social worker. So I thought, oh, well, that's good. They've got, someone up, and because the social worker would have been who I would ask to talk to for like mental health types of things. This isn't a person I met ahead of time or that I made acquaintance with ahead of time. But at least they were up on the board, right? So I asked about that person and they said, well, he's not going to be available on the weekends. And my surgery was on Friday, right? So, and basically I was in ICU over the weekend.
So, yeah, you went home Tuesday, right?
Yeah. So that was the first mental health conversation I had that didn't go well. And then
that's insane.
And then I asked, I think then later I said, okay, so, I'm going to be in a room on Monday. Actually, I was in a room on Sunday night, Monday. Yeah. And so on Monday, is this person or someone else? Cause I'll be in a different place, right? I was going to go from ICU to the cardiovascular, whatever. So yeah. Maybe that would be a different person or what, something. Anyhow, I said, so if I wanted to talk to somebody, and I thought I did want to talk to somebody because, you mentioned that you heard from some people that people can have some mental health issues after surgery. Well, I didn't even really know what those were exactly. So I felt like I would like to know, right? I mean, how am I going to know what to look out? Everyone else is telling me what to look out for with my incision, with this and that and the other thing. where's the person to tell me what to look out for? You know, like if I'm, you know, what kind of emotions do I need to look out for, thoughts or any other kind of symptoms? And the person said, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's reasonable. We can, you know, do that. I said, all right, well, I'd like to talk to somebody, you know, when you move me over to my room, whoever that is. And that was it. I didn't even know who the person, like the board in that room didn't even have that person's name or anything.
And you never talked to him. I've heard after open heart surgery, the biggest one is feelings of abandonment. So that was a joke because the person never showed up, you know? So it's, I'm funny. Clearly this surgery has messed you up. You don't remember how funny I am.
I'm thinking about this whole thing because I haven't really talked to anybody about it until just now. Well, Abby, of course, but
now I'm just seeing you in the hospital bed, be like, save it for the podcast. Save it for the podcast. I have conditioned you appropriately.
But there are a lot of weird emotions, you know, that like I didn't want anything more.
You froze up. You didn't want anything more.
You can't hear me or anything?
No, now I can.
Okay.
Try again.
I didn't want anything more than to get out of the hospital. But then once I was out of the hospital, I started having anxiety about, oh gosh, what if this happens? And what if this happens? And what if this happens? So it's like one part of me just wanted to be out and another part of me was scared to be out. And so
that makes sense. The sort of claustrophobia involved, but also comfort, because that's where they can take care of things, but also you're stuck in a bed with stuff stuck in you. And there's nothing like being in a hospital for feeling like there's no progress. The first milestone of progress is always they let you the fuck out of the hospital.
Well, and for a long time, I had tubes still coming out of my body, abdomen.
That's always a weird one.
And wires too. The doctor had to come in and yank those out. That felt weird. But yeah, there was just, it was a very, you know, like you and I talked before, you know, towards the hospital is such a weird place.
Yep.
Things have, like, you know, the surgery itself, as I was just mentioning, how bizarre it is for such a terrible, violent thing to happen between two people, but it's considered a good, positive thing. And of course it is, saved my life. But that's another thing too, is, you know, all these people, pretty much everybody you run into is there to save your life. They don't even know you, you know? And especially in today's climate where there's a lot of conversation had about whether or not a certain types of people are worthy of being helped, right? If they're a bad person or they're a good person, or if they've ever posted this, that, or the other thing on Twitter or whatever. Nobody there cared about any of that. Nobody cared who I voted for or didn't vote for or what my opinions were on anything.
Which is weird because I was telling them. I was sending them all sorts of messages. Like, just so you know.
All they cared about was that I was going to die if they didn't help me, so they were going to help me.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's something very inspiring and touching and moving about that. Somehow surprising. I mean, I'm in a hospital. I don't know why it was surprising, but it kind of was. And everybody was nice. All my nurses were really good. All the people that came in the room, like to even to just collect garbage or whatever, were really nice. And I thanked them for coming and doing that. I was just so grateful. I mean, it was just an overwhelming feeling of gratitude the whole time. And that was really nice. But that was along with, you know, feeling uncomfortable and tired and sometimes horrified. It's yep. Like, how can these amazing, intense, positive emotions be right next to these terrible, frightening, horrific emotions? But that's the way it was the whole time. And it was
hospitals are kind of They take you out of real life. The stuff that's going on there is not about the world or about what, like, all of that gets put on pause for this important medical stuff. And then you can start your life again when you leave, sort of.
It's, I don't know. I mean, I've visited hospitals my whole life, mm-hmm. you know, so I know the routine. I know how it goes. I know what it's generally like for visitors and workers. And I did work in a hospital for a while, but this is my first experience, like being in the hospital, right? Being overnight, had surgery, all that stuff. And I knew that it would be an experience that would not, that would be revelatory to me in so many ways, in spite of knowing so many people were in the hospital, I've spent overnight in the hospital with people before, but I knew being the patient was going to be, no matter how empathetic and sympathetic I could be to the people I was in the hospital with, I couldn't really understand their experience until I went through it myself. So I knew it was going to be very different and new. And it was, boy, it's like, man, this is bizarre. It's completely bizarre, this experience. I don't look forward to having it again. It's probably going to happen because I'll probably have to have this valve replaced, hopefully a long time from now, but
20, 30 days.
I don't know. I mean, how long were you in the hospital with your surgery? I forget.
Oh, with the surgery. Cause I've been in a couple times.
Oh,
I remember I had the tonsillectomy from hell.
Right.
That put me in for a few days.
That's right.
Not very long at all. Especially post surgery. It was a while up front because nobody was expecting, it was kind of emergency surgery. And they didn't do good at that. So they brought me into the ER and then they admitted me and they're like, yeah, we're going to do this soon. So the big thing was they were like, we're going to do this in a few hours. So don't eat anything. And then they're like, oh crap, we can't do it now. We're going to do it tomorrow morning, but it's too late to eat anything. And it ended up being like, I was in there for like 30 hours before the surgery. But when I finally woke up, it wasn't long. It was basically long enough for me to get my bearings, get some food, and then prove I could walk, prove I could pee, and prove I could poop. And the last part was the one that took a real long time. But once that was done, they let me go. So like I woke up, I want to say 9 something in the morning, and we were out by about 2:30.
Wow.
But I was going to say, but it wasn't my chest cavity. It was just my spine, but it is still like it was a relatively, and from what I gathered, my surgery did not go well. I mean, the end result was miraculous. And I've since found out I got real lucky because back surgery often is not very, it often has issues, but the actual process took about twice as long as it was supposed to. And apparently was not a fun time for the surgical team. I was fine. I was asleep. But mine's all fascinating to me though, because like I came in like you would expect. I'm laying on a thing and they're, they knock me out of everything. But my actual surgery, I was fucking strung up, spread eagle, hanging, like my stomach was hanging down so they could get at my spine. And for days afterwards, my shoulders and my hips were really sore, and I was like, why? And they're like, because you were like this for 6 hours. But I was not awake for any of that, so that was nice. And actually by the time I woke up, I had my tube out, so I never had to deal with that. I think that would really fuck me up.
Like I said, it wasn't that bad, as long as I wasn't trying to cough. But I couldn't help that. So,
yeah. You know what I think is going to help your recovery time? Because you just sort of stuck there, whatever. you could read a book.
That's, you know, my plan was to read a lot of things, but I've had headaches most days. I can't read when I have a headache. Or haven't got very much sleep the day before, and I can't read when I'm really tired either.
So well, I haven't maybe
really any reading time.
You could just read one book. I have one to recommend.
Do? Oh, I please tell me.
Do. It's called,
tell me all about it.
It's called Odd Wings. And it's available for purchase now on Smashwords. And it's got a real cover and everything.
Cover.
And it has sold 6 copies so far and given away 1 copy for free. But it has sold 6. I have made over $13 off of this book. I spent a few hundred in costs getting to this point, but I'm officially a professional writer now.
You are. So what's the Kindle situation?
You can get it on a Kindle. It's not on Amazon yet. It will be, but they have a whole other rigmarole to do that. Smashwords will help me get it everywhere except Amazon, although that's still pending. It's on Smashwords. It has to go through manual vetting to get on its premium catalog, where then it goes to Apple and Barnes and Noble and places like that. But basically every digital format you could want is available when you buy it at Smashwords. It costs $3 and you can get it in EPUB, you can get it in Mobi, which is the Kindle one, you can get it in PDF, you can read it right on there on the screen. You can get it in LRF if you have a really old Sony style reader. You can get it on all sorts of different versions. But it's not Amazon. So if you want to read it on a Kindle device, you download the Mobi version, and you either have to do some trick where you email it to your Amazon email. I don't really know how that works, but they have a thing where you can send them files and it'll automatically feed them over Whisper Sync or whatever. I don't understand it. Or you can do like I did, which is I downloaded it to my laptop and then I plugged in my Kindle to it, and it shows the Kindle there, and it's basically like it's an external hard drive, and I go to the documents folder and I drag the file into the documents folder, and boom, it's on my Kindle. I don't love the way it looks on Kindle currently. There is no increased space between paragraphs, and the indent is real, real, real tiny. And so it is the text is denser than I would like. It still reads just fine, and it can be manipulated like with a Kindle, and it page breaks at chapters just fine. It's doable. I would like it a little bit better on Kindle. I've looked at the EPUB version online and it looks great.
Good.
I would recommend everybody go to smashwords.com, and if you type in Anthony K. Parsons or you type in Odd Wings, all one word, ODDWINGS, it will come up. It is also, last I saw, the newest thing in the new arrivals for the gay and lesbian fiction section. And it is still somewhere on the page for the new arrivals for the fantasy section. Those are the two categories I have currently attached it to. Go get it, people, please. And read it. And it's not that long. And if you like it, force other people to buy it and read it. And so on. I want to do a full-on multi-level marketing scheme here. If you don't like it, then you don't have to force people. But I want everybody, it's not even the money, it's $3. I set it pretty low, but I just want people to read it. I want everybody to go read it, and then more people read it. So go do that, please. Thank you.
Abby and I thought your author's bio was really good.
The author, the about the author and the acknowledgments, I had to, I was like, because I was at that point where I was like, I just need to get this shit done. It needs to be over. And so those I didn't try real hard. That's why I sent a last minute email on the blurb, but I didn't send one for those. I just read them to Trish and I was like, those don't sound crazy, right? She's like, no. So I was happy with those. And yeah, the acknowledgments was good. You got the rare double mention in the acknowledgments.
You didn't know there were acknowledgments.
Yeah. End of the book, right? Sorry. The about the author, I did put the about the author in my profile as well, but the book after the end of the book has an acknowledgement section and an about the author section. And you are the only person who gets named twice, although no one would know that because you are mentioned under two different names.
Okay, I'll have to look at that. I didn't know.
You get credited in the editors like everyone else, but you specifically get credited as essentially my sounding board, and it was in an authorial capacity, so it is listed under your pen name. So I specifically have an acknowledgement for Clifton D. Hawk.
Nice, thank you.
I thought it was a good way to do it. I mean, Trish just gets to be checked as Trish in both places because that's who she is, but I'm like, this is a author thing.
Yep.
So I call you with your author name.
Good.
I
still use that name. Still will on my stuff that I'm publishing in the future. So
yeah. So now that this is out of the way, it was weird. I published it and like, I've been so tense for so long. Cause I mean, I finished the book like literally years ago at this point, and all the time of getting it out there was such, and I just needed to get done it, and I did it and none of the tension released at all.
Why is that?
And I was like, I don't know. And no. I'm like, this sucks. What is happening? So I was like, you know what? Screw it. I basically took the rest of the day off. I had a nap. I didn't do anything real productive. It was Wednesday, so I didn't have to cook dinner anywhere or whatever. And now I feel better. And the tension has sort of passed, but at the time, I think it was just such a non-event to me that it didn't do it. And so it took a while to sort of slowly leak out of me, because I do feel better now. And now I'm like, I am at ground zero from publishing anything else. So now I can really focus on writing, which is the part that I like and that I think I'm good at. So that'll be good. But yeah, please go check it out, everybody. You can download a sample of the first 20% if you don't want to risk $3. And that's, I feel like the first 20% of it is probably enough to know if it's your bag or not.
Yeah. And I think most people after reading that much would want to see where it goes. I think
I do have a worry, because back in the day, that one of the many querying things was like, send the first 5 pages or whatever. And I'm like, is that, I know that's a thing and you should grab people. I don't know if I do that, but like 20% of the book. Yeah, no, I think you'll have a sense by then. Yeah, do we want to try and sneak in an email here?
Okay.
You don't have a lot of time, but I think we should.
Oh, I mean, I didn't know if there was other things about your week you wanted to talk about, or we're doing a double, so maybe.
That's part of it, yeah. No, there's nothing particularly interesting right now. We finished Brand New Cherry Flavor. We're doing Midnight Mass, barely. I am compelled to keep watching, but I do not know why. Because we are only 2 episodes in, but it is so much, it is not horror. It is awkward small town conversations, the TV show. And everything is either completely inscrutable to the point of being insane, or so heavily telegraphed that like, we get a point and I'm like, okay. And then 5 minutes later, they do the thing that I knew they were going to do. And I'm like, why did we have to spend 5 minutes leading up to that? There is a thing in the trailer, spoilers for the trailer of Midnight Mass, where you see a priest coaxing a girl out of a wheelchair to walk. It's kind of a big deal. little surprised they stuck it in the trailer. However, had I not known it from the trailer, I still would have known that was happening way before it happened, because they make shit so fucking obvious on that level. And then there's other bits where like a half hour of stuff happened and like none of it means anything. I don't know why any of that happened. I don't know. It is the least effectual law enforcement agent I've ever seen in my life. And it's terrible because I was so happy to see him. But what he does is he has worked very hard on a very specific pose, hands on hip, cocked slightly to the side. That is all he does. Whether crimes are happening or crimes are not happening, that is what he does. Art Linkletter is not Art Linkletter. Hamish Linkletter is fucking carrying the show. He's also not doing anything, but I love watching him do it. I don't understand why. Everybody else sucks, but like not in a cool way, just like in a boring way. And like nothing is happening. And I'm annoyed by that. But for some reason, I can't give it up. Trish was like, I said, are you done? She's like, I'm done if you're done. And I was like, I can't yet. I don't know why. And there's only 7 episodes. I mean, I don't hate it, but it's just so much work is going into the production values and the acting and all of this stuff. And nothing happening. There's nothing.
You watched it twice.
Well, and this is the thing I am remembering. It wasn't to this scale, but I do remember the first couple episodes of Hill House kind of also felt like this. Like, yeah, we're laying a lot of groundwork in a boring way, and we're really trying to pretend it's more exciting than it is. But like, but it got there. It earned it eventually. And so I'm like, this might get there.
And it might not. I mean, I think one of the reasons it resonated with me, both of us, but probably even more with me, is there's the church aspect. You know, I was raised in church.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff in the show that speaks to that, and that if you were raised in church, you can relate to very strongly. I don't think it's gonna, it'll either mean nothing to other people, or it'll seem like a plot point, a casual plot point. But for me, and I think for Abby too, because she wasn't raised in church, but she had some, you know, she went through a period of time where there was a lot of church participation or whatever. It feels like it's speaking to the demographic we belong to, I guess. So
I guess, I mean, Trish was raised in the church and it's not hitting her, but the things associated with that, I'm not saying it doesn't have that. I feel like I've been there for that. Like, I don't think it's being, I think stuff has brought up this stuff before. I'm not getting anything new out of the vibe of the community. There was a very intense discussion over loss of faith that I was like, that is a cool discussion. Or at least it was when I was 20 and got high after I'd been taking an intro philosophy course.
Yeah, like, right.
I've literally had that conversation. Right. Okay. Like, I don't know why you need to put, why that gets to be on TV then. It is trying to do these things. And again, like, I cannot fault the actors and I cannot fault the production quality. It is gorgeous. I absolutely believe everybody.
Well, and that's part of it, believing everybody, because
it's not painful to watch. It gets boring, but I don't feel I'm suffering because there is such a verisimilitude to it.
Yeah. What you said about the, some of the conversations being very, you know, college freshman philosophy class or whatever, that you're right about that. That's a thing that I thought too, while I was watching it. But the reason it didn't bother me was because it seemed to make sense in the context that it was delivered and from the character it was delivered from. And so it's like, okay, I mean, as a viewer hearing this from the screenwriter or the show creator or whatever, it's a little annoying. But on the level of the character and the narrative, that is what that character would say. That is where that character would probably be.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that that character saying that to this other person and whatever.
And I will grant you that. And I think that fundamentally is where the difficulty then becomes for me, because I agree with that. And it feels very real in a lot of ways. These people feel very real. These people also feel very uninteresting and not people that I want to know about or care about. But shit is starting. And again, there are a few places where they've tried to do this. This may not be fair because J.J. Abrams was nowhere near this project, but there are a lot of characters that it feels like we are being deliberately obtuse with so that you will want to know what their deal is. And I find that annoying. However, one or two of them, it's working on me, and I really want to know what their deal is. So that helps. Again, the prime example being the Haymitch Linklater character. Like, I want to know what the fuck is up with that guy. He is weird, and I have three or four different versions in my head, one of which involves him being possessed by the goddamn devil, and I really kind of want to see which of the versions I have in my head is accurate.
Well, I think for me, this is a rare piece of fiction where I feel like I understand who the characters are and what they're doing.
All right.
I mean, we've talked about this before. I'm constantly asking people, usually just Abby, what's happening? Why are they doing that? And she has to explain something. But I mean, nobody has to explain anything to me while I'm watching this. I get it. You know, where I know, again, sometimes the people are not very sophisticated in the things they think or do.
Yeah.
But I...
And he froze up, people. I'm going to try and finish what he was saying, which is, he's back.
These are people I have known personally and have dealt with personally.
You come from fisherman stock?
Not that much different than farmers, I guess, or rural people.
Lutheran farmers, Catholic fishermen, same deal.
Working class people.
Yeah.
And
that's always a thing. If the characters resonate with you, for good or for bad, that often will draw a person in.
Yeah, they're just familiar to me. A lot of the stuff that's happening, it's like, I've been in this situation before. I've known that kind of a person. And I've known both of these kinds of people, and the way they're interacting is exactly the way they interacted, you know, in my experience. So, you know, it's familiar to me, I think. And that's a rare experience for me in fiction, because usually I don't know what's going on. I don't know why people are doing what they're doing. I don't understand their thought process or their cultural milieu or anything. But, you know,
yeah.
I kind of get this. It's not that's fishermen rather than farmers. It's you know, it's Catholics rather than Protestants.
I was
and so
teasing
on,
about that, but I understand what you're saying. And we're gonna keep watching. And I am still convinced it is going to pay off. Trish less so. I will say this is funny though, speaking of familiarity. Recently, and again, we've only watched two episodes, we encountered either the third or fourth time where Riley, arguably our main character, lay down in his bed, quietly said the last line he had said in the previous scene, and then the camera started to tilt. And like I said, this was the third or fourth time this exact thing had happened, and I heard my wife go, "Ugh," and I quickly turned the volume down on the television because they do the same thing every time. And I knew what was about to happen, and I knew it was going to be jarring and annoying. And I found it hilarious that it had become, in only two episodes, so common a thing that that exact pattern of events happened and we knew exactly what would happen next, and it did. That was funny to me. But no, I am convinced it's going to pay off. Also, the names of people are amazing. We got somebody named Bull, and we got somebody named Hooker. I love it. Bull and Hooker. Also, I hate, but it's a real, it's good writing. Our sheriff is of Middle Eastern descent, and there is an asshole who constantly refers to the sheriff as Sharif. And I'm like, that is fucking horrible racism, and that is brilliant writing. Like, that is the cleverest racism I've encountered in a long time. And it keeps coming up, and I'm like, oh, fuck you. Oh, that was smart. Don't like him. He's a jerk, but that was clever.
Yeah, there's a lot of clever little things like that in it.
Yeah, no, I have hope. We definitely can't do a question now because we spent, I knew this was going to happen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I knew we were going to spend, I almost didn't bring up Midnight Mass because I'm like, I'm going to have a lot to say and he's going to have a lot to say, but that's probably a good reason to bring it up. Although I've only watched 2 episodes, so I don't have a lot of, don't take anything I said as accurate because I've only watched 2 episodes. But we will see. All right. Next week is going to be just immediately for us because I will be traveling when we're doing it, but that'll be back in a second. So William's going to look the same. So don't think he's having issues with recovery. No time has passed. All right. You have a good week. Write more in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. But more than that, you can abandon the podcast completely if you just slavishly purchase, read, and force upon others my new book, Odd Wings, found at smashwords.com.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.